summer coming up. Dave Grenig, Jay Pribman, Ron Gierkink to talk Woodbine. And if we have time, we'll even reach out for Mike Welch. And we say good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. And here we are. We're 2 days into Belmont, and they've managed to make it interesting already. We've got 300,000-plus pick five carryover today. We've got the Empire Six Force out already for tomorrow. And we've had two, you know, interesting days of racing. Wednesday, pretty, you know, mundane and formful. And then yesterday, the bombs were going off left and right.
Yeah, yesterday's card, I think looking at it ahead of time, felt like it was one that was going to be a little bit more explosive, I guess you could say, in terms of prices, and the races just looked like, you know, you had a feature race on Wednesday that we talked about Wednesday morning that under, you know, very few circumstances was going to be won by anybody outside of the two favorites, and then you had a big drop down in the last and in the loop, and it just looked like a situation where one of four horses was going to win the eighth. Yeah, I mean, yesterday you couldn't have that confidence, and then of course you get winners like Rickon and Perret, and obviously Honey Bernardini in the last race was just the cherry on top given what had happened leading into it, and I think a winning race was run by Snicket, but take nothing away from the winner, and you know, Homebred by the Very Unstable, and John Morrison had trained most as Hostess, and you know, for everybody who's been out of the loop with New York racing or doesn't follow it all that closely, John Morrison's a very underrated veteran conditioner, mm-hmm. and is a guy who can have horses ready to go pretty much at any level, and only had a couple of starters at Aqueduct earlier this year. In fact, one of the, I think about the third to last week, he had a blowout winner on debut, and that horse comes back over the weekend, and we'll see how he performs. But, yeah, John Morrison was able to get that big winner across, and you know, there were some good efforts yesterday. Obviously, Tappet to Win was the highlight of all of those, and that was the horse that I think we all thought he could become when he won the race when he broke his maiden on Travers Day, and we all kind of paused and were like, how is this horse the only one who raced on the inside and yet was still effective? And getting back to a route of ground as a three-year-old clearly made a big difference. And this is a conversation that we have frequently, and I think any regular horse player would have, is that the maturity that a horse shows as a three-year-old and the process that they go through it's immeasurable. And that was a situation where, you know, he caught lightning in a bottle to an extent in that he got the lead on a track that did feel like it was playing a little bit favorably, but take nothing away from him. He ran great. He set extremely strong fractions, went on with it, and, you know, this performance is probably just a little bit too close. But boy, I mean, you'd wonder, thinking about getting that horse into the classic mix, he's probably headed to one of the grade ones in July, and ultimately can still be a Kentucky Derby horse with the reconfigured calendar.
He actually may be running back in June.
Yeah, I feared he's gonna run back in the Belmont, which, you know, look, I'm all for running horses. That might be a little too much. I hope he can perform at the same level.
Well, we haven't gotten the official word yet, and you certainly could if you have seen anything further. But we reached out to Andy Beyer this morning because the Tappet to Win fig was the only one that hasn't been posted, and Andy's trying to put the puzzle together because the number came back raw enormous, and I mean just as like an aberration enormous, so
yeah,
I guess we're waiting.
Well, and of course it happened on the part of the card where it was surrounded by turf races.
Yes.
Not completely, in that Rickon had just run in the seventh, but you know, the last two races of the day were run on the turf, and so there wasn't anything to back it up afterwards. It did seem as if the track undoubtedly got faster as the day went on, and it was a clear sunny day. I think that there was also, I'm just guessing, I've not had any contact with anyone, I'm sure there was some consideration given to the time, simply because, I mean, his mile split was like, what, 33-1? So, I mean, it was an insanely fast race. But from everything I've seen, the time seems to have held up, and So I would imagine that Andy and Mark Hopkins are working on that to get the figure out as soon as possible. But it is going to be, actually have not looked at what the raw number is. I'm guessing it was gigantic. I meant to look, but you know, I was very busy with Golden Gate figures, so I couldn't attack myself.
It was apparently a 107 on the raw.
Yeah, it was really fast. So, yeah, it was really, really fast. So, and of course, I mean, Andy is way more qualified, way more qualified. I could never dream of being as qualified to discuss this. But this is the age old situation with speed figures, right? Which is, what happens to Country Grammar? What happens to Mystic Guide? Did those horses simply run faster because they were chasing this horse? And I mean, look, my take on it is yes. I think that was the case. I mean, horses are pack animals. They often perform to the level of the horses that are around them. And so, yeah, I believe that's exactly what will happen. So, yeah, I mean, you're going to see a figure that probably is massaged a little bit. And the good thing about it is, you know, without getting into a long conversation about speed figures, but speed figures are meant for interpretation. They're meant for people to look at them and determine what they want to do with them. If you simply say, I'm going to bet that horse because they have the highest buyer, and you lose money and you get angry, well, you're an idiot. You know, I mean, that's not the point. So the point is that you're supposed to use them to fit your handicapping style and process. And this is going to be one where obviously there's going to be a mountain of interpretation.
The bottom line is it ran very big, and they've liked this horse from day one.
Huge.
And,
yeah.
They're very excited.
Well, this horse is a great example of what will make this Derby interesting, which is that, you know, all of these Maxfield and him and, you know, a lot of the late blooming horses from the big barns too, you know, they're in the mix for a Kentucky Derby. And normally, if Tappet to Win had won, you know, on a one other than on opening week of June at Belmont, you know, we'd be talking about the Dwyer. Right, we were talking about the Jim Dandy and ultimately him being a Travers horse, but now he's in the mix for the classics, and you know, that's fun. I want those races to have as many good horses as possible.
Quite a few good horses on Saturday's card, and we're going to quickly, before we get to Saturday, Nick, just a couple of hits on the sequence today for those that hadn't necessarily expected to have to deal with this Pick 5 carryover. First of all, how much do you think the pool swells to? What multiple of the 300,000?
I mean, I think 10 to 12 is probably conservative. I think there's going to be low takeout bet like that with a huge carryover. I would imagine it's 3 million would be my guess. I'm not particularly skilled at these, and the good thing is that, as we've joked in the past, Marshall Graham will let us know if it's a positive expectation afterwards, which I imagine it's going to be to some extent. The takeout's probably going to be reduced to low single digits, but it's an approachable sequence also. There's a lot of the big-name trainers have horses that are short prices on the morning line and look very, very formidable. So, I mean, I think it's going to be, I would guess, $3.5 million.
Nice. Your analysis and my pick five opinions are up at the races. Nick's opinions presented by RTN. And for those that come to the website, you'll see the RTN banners. A five-day free trial anytime you want at RTN when you go to sign up, RTNBYK, and you'll get five free days to get a feel for how terrific it is to watch virtually every feed in the world and virtually every oval involving competitive horses, dogs, everything else. RTN.
10 years worth of race replays.
Yes, the replay part of it, you know, instead of having to, you know, bounce around for replays, they're all right there at your fingertips. So take advantage now that we've got so many more ovals that are back running. Now it's worth the 5 day. I've kind of held off on this offer, but 5 days worth of RTN to get a feel for it. Just click on the link and use the RTN BYK, and they're presenting Nick's analysis all this Belmont meet. Nick, give us the A's from your approach today. You know, has to be on the Pick 5 ticket.
Yeah, you know, I think in the first leg, without question, you're going to want to use Amundsen and Instagram as A's. Instagram getting back to sprinting, first time for Chad Brown. Barnes very, very good with dirt sprinters off trainer changes, 7 of his last 14 with nearly a $4 ROI. And this is a horse I think whose career would have been a lot different if he had been left sprinting the entire time. He actually, I think, was getting back into form for Don Chatlow's before making this barn change. There's a plethora of early speed in here, and I think that should play into his hands. Amundsen is the speed of the speed. He was very impressive in winning the Holly Hughes last time. Aggressive jockey on board again. He's the horse to use if you want the speed of the speed. I'm going to use him because I think he's talented enough to win pretty much regardless of circumstance. I think Stretch the Story is very much the horse to beat in the seventh. Time Limit looks like she's going to get a little bit too much competition on the front end to trust her terribly much, but I would absolutely use her. I would also use Amos, who gets back to sprint to the turf and cuts back a little bit in distance. This is something that Mike Maselli specializes in, and I think Amos is going to be a very attractive price. I would also find a way to include Dancing with Daffodils, whose turf races last year for this low-percentage barn were actually very good, and I think it's very intriguing to see Jose Ortiz get on board. Not sure if this horse is a winning type, might just be a more of a backup, but I think one that you can include as an A if you have the bankroll for it. A lot of this pick five sequence for a lot of players is going to boil down to how they handle voting agreement in the eighth. And I mean, voting agreement ran a race as a 2-year-old. You rarely see this, but she ran a race as a 2-year-old. That simply duplicating that in here is going to make her a very comfortable winner. It would take an improved effort from Catch a Thrill, I think, to beat her. But voting agreement was very impressive. Didn't get off all that quickly. Finished with a real burst in the stretch, and looks like a horse who'll handle 6 furlongs and potentially beyond. I think she ends up being a lone A for most people. Obviously, Bradenberry is dangerous. Grand Motion's barn's been going very well. This is a horse who's probably going to be better sprinting, and the aforementioned Catch a Thrill is a horse who can lay back and make one run. It does seem as if there's a decent amount of early zip in here. I think the feature will come down to Royal Charlotte, Mother Mother, and Chalone, and most people are going to use all three. I wouldn't really discourage anyone from using all three. I picked Mother Mother. Bob Baffert, obviously, running horses in New York is something you always want to pay attention to. This filly was victorious last time Rosario was on board. Didn't have the cleanest of trips last time. Ultimately, didn't have a huge excuse, but Bellafina on her home track is a very formidable rival. So I would say that using all three seems like the best approach. And the last is just a skull-busting race. Assuming this is staying on the turf, I picked Uncle George, who's a first-time starter by Uncle Mo, half to Epping Forest, who was stakes place, a 6-time turf winner for Christophe Clement. And this is a barn, obviously, that does very well with first-time starters. There's a noticeable gap in his workout, so I'm not going to be surprised if this horse ends up needing a race. He just was a logical alternative to me to some of the horses who've run before. Complex System was bad last time, no matter how you stack it up. He's probably going to be better sprinting, but these are the kind of horses cutting back on the turf that can lead to a lot of losing tickets. I threw Caribbean Gold in the mix, who I think is dangerous at getting an extra furlong. You want a horse that's going to be probably a little bit more forwardly placed than him in here, and I wonder if he might get a little shuffled out towards the inside. I actually think Point of Humor is a dangerous horse. He's been effective at both the maiden special weight level and a little bit cheaper, but is a horse that can win this race if things break his way, and I'm hoping that they're aggressive with him right out of the gate. So it's that kind of race. I think it's the good thing about being able to single voting agreement, maybe going too deep in the first leg, is that you can go 4 or 5 deep here in this nightcap.
Well, and you didn't mention two horses that I kind of referenced to this race earlier when I said that, you know, there were firsters, and one firster you didn't mention, Shadwell. Michael Pino brings Arcan up from Philly, and I thought Arcan was far from impossible and was overpriced at 20-1. But New Frontier and Propensity, I mean, these are those types that, you know, if you're on a budget, you really have to hesitate, and you think, well, they're on their way to being career maidens, but I think that's being a little dismissive of both of them. So this is challenging, and it's going to come down to what you can afford in the nightcap.
Yeah, the best thing about New Frontier unquestionably is the inside post and Kendrick Harmouche. And I mean, most people would say, why would you want a speed horse drawn inside in a turf sprint? But I mean, there's only one way to go, right? And I think that New Frontier got in trouble when he was rated a little bit excessively by Manny Franco. Now, that being said, the pace in his last two starts was strong. So I agree. I mean, the quick workout probably signals New Frontier ready to run an improved race. And, you know, Arcan is a horse that just kind of gets lost in the shuffle, being that there's so many so many contenders in here, but yeah, obviously this is a barn that's been effective with first-time starters. Propensity is not the kind of horse that I like in turf sprints at Belmont, but I understand people who may go there, and the more you dig into Belmont's stats, he does not do very well with turf sprinters, and that's something that obviously he can improve upon, and I would certainly take Propensity over Brighthorn of the two Belmont trainees, but he's a horse that I would probably not use as more than a C, but I think he could find his way onto your ticket if you think he can get in there.
Really interesting sequence, and it's approachable. That's the best part. We overlap on quite a bit, and the one horse I'll throw into this in the seventh, in the second leg, I thought Winifred J, Eddie Barker. We ran against her at Saratoga, and Eddie got claimed out of that race, and he was apoplectic. he could not believe that she got claimed, and he was not happy about it, and claimed her right back. And you know, one of the things that's happening, that's going to continue to happen right now, the early part of this Belmont meet, is you're going to get horses that are all dirtied up, that have been running on dirt, that spent the winter at Aqueduct and made two or three starts, and people are going to say, "Oh, this horse stinks," except that those horses are turf horses, and don't be confused, and don't think that the races from in November don't mean anything, because they do, because a lot of these are turf horses that haven't had a chance to run on turf until now. So, FYI.
The good thing about this horse is, knowing Eddie Barker, she's going straight to the lead, so you can be certain where she's going to be early, and we know what worked for her last year. So, yeah, she's going to be forwardly placed, no doubt about it, just has to avoid a pace battle.
It's a fun race. Donk, I referenced Donk earlier today, too. Ancient Brown got me a little interested. And one horse you didn't mention in that opener, too, One More Great Time that O'Dwyer is going to send out. And I thought that he stood to get a suck-along trip behind the speed inside, and given how good the inside was yesterday, plus there was some rain overnight, I'm inclined to use One More Great Time as well in that opener, the first leg.
Well, if there's an appreciable path bias, utilize Twitter and see if you can get it to Eric Consell. It certainly would help, because he's been I'm an Eric Consell fan, don't get me wrong, but he dragged Shamrock Kid so far out of that race early yesterday, and he's been known to hit up a dead rail on a few occasions. So no, I agree. This horse has run races that are good enough to win. There's no question about it. Yeah. It's going to boil down to how much pace there ends up being, and if Instagram improves off the trainer change.
Let's look at the Empire Six. We'll just it's pretty straightforward. Let's dive in. It starts with the Fort Marcy, four straight graded stakes, and we're going a mile and an eighth on the inner turf.
You know, this is an interesting race because there's really no speed, and that should work to the advantage of Some Like It Hot Brown. It still is one of those situations where we have a hard time believing Some Like It Hot Brown is good enough to win the race. And, you know, then you have Temple, who is improved and you know, ran, I thought, a credible race last time in beating Arthur Kitt. Arthur Kitt, of course, came back and was a bit of a dud on Wednesday, but we did discuss how Arthur Kitt was probably ready off the bench, more so than second off of it. You know, I'm kind of boring here. I think Instilled Regard is the best horse in the race. I don't want to hold that Fairgrounds effort against him, because nobody moved from off the pace at all that day except for Rock Emperor, and Rock Emperor, I thought, came back and ran very credibly in the Charles Whittingham. So I think Instilled Regard is the best horse in here, and he'll probably end up winning. I think that if he doesn't, then it might be one of his Chad Brown stablemates. Not really Tribhuvan, probably more so Devamani. Devamani had a great trip in the Tampa Bay to miss by a nose, saved all kinds of ground, and Rosario got him outside just when he needed to. Flopshot is a horse that has run races in Europe that would certainly make him dangerous. You know, you believe, of course, that these horses are going to improve with Lasix. Chad Brown does very, very well with these types, so I think you have to include him. But, you know, I'm not going to be surprised, and I'm going to take the approach that Instilled Regard is really the horse to beat, and I'm just going to relegate pretty much everybody else to a backup and try and take a little bit of a stand to start it.
Second leg and the start of the pick five, and again, it's a force out tomorrow of the Empire Six, so be aware. And of course, it took a Herculean effort yesterday, right, to keep the thing alive. It was even a fairly miraculous. the Westchester came up really good, and you know, plenty of horses in here are going to turn back later, first Saturday in July for the Met, and this also marks the return of Code of Honor, away 7 months, and a lot of people excited to see him back, but there are three or four serious considerations in here, win candidates at square prices.
Yeah, and you know, in discussing Code of Honor, Chip McGahee over the last 5 years with Dirt Routers off 180-plus day layoffs is 1-for-15 with a 48-cent ROI. And this feels like a situation where Code of Honor is probably being given a race. Now, look, Code of Honor at 75%, 80% might just be good enough to win, but it's a scenario where I would be very careful about leaning too much on him and assuming that he's going to be back at the level that he was when he finished 2019. This is my like wild, crazy thought of the day, perhaps of the week, and if it works out, maybe of the year. But I like Forewarned, and my thought on Forewarned is for the venerable Uriah St. Louis. Forewarned was on a dead rail last time. He had absolutely no pace to run at. That was a day where Senior Investment, who somehow has been reincarnated as a speed horse, it was victorious on the front end and got no pressure. Two back, he was too close to the pace. Forewarned is going to be able to lay back and make one run, a la his stablemate, Discreet Lover, who did for these connections. You know, Manny Franco's a real jockey. This is a situation where there should be a lot of pace in front of him. He might not be able to run better than third, but I'm going to take a chance here and use him prominently, figuring that you could just really blow up every multi-race bet if he's somehow able to shock this bunch. I don't trust Code of Honor. I think Endorsed is an overrated horse. I think he's good enough to win, but he's going to have to elevate his game. And, you know, and who else is there, right? Payne, Mijos, these are horses that are just, when you look at it on any measurable speed figure, Forewarned is just as fast as all of them. So why not take a horse that's going to be 40 or 50 to 1 and see if we might just be able to get lucky?
You know, they've had success, Manny, with Uriah St. Louis. He's reached for him before, and I love it. It feels like a race that, you know, that is begging for something different to happen, and that would be different. Let's get to the second, third leg the start of the pick four, the Intercontinental, and Chad, obviously the major force in here with newspaper of record coming back, and she's had almost a year to kind of regather herself, and maybe she's one of these fillies that had the great 2-year-old season, had a lost year at 3, and then recaptures the mojo at 4. Wouldn't be the first.
Yeah. No question about it. I mean, and you're talking about, there's a lot of comebacking horses on this card, right, with what's happened with the calendar, and probably none is more interesting than the Newspaper of Record, whose 2019 was just a complete disaster. And the 7/8 figures to be, it should be a good trip for her. I'm not all that convinced that she's a horse who needs to be cut back. I think she needs to be allowed to just run early and see what happens. So I think ultimately down the line you might see her a little bit more effective at a mile. This is clearly a race that's looking to set her up for something like the Just a Game if she performs well. I mean, I think she really has one horse to beat, and that's her stablemate, Significant Form, who, Significant Form has run races consistently that win today, and there aren't a lot of horses that you can say that about, win tomorrow, I should say, including last year's Intercontinental, and then Significant Form followed that up, of course, with good efforts in the Boston Spa and the Noble Damsel, figures to be in a good stalking spot from the outside. It just all sets up perfectly for her. With Newspaper of Record, what I think you're hoping is that she's going to allow Jakarta to go and then set up outside of her. That's